94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am joined by Leighton Johnson. Leighton Johnson, doing a lot of positivity, spreading positivity through our community. So I appreciate you for taking the time out to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about where you grew up.
Well, contrary to belief, because I think you just thought I grew up in New Haven, but I grew up in the Bronx. I was born and raised in the Bronx. I'm a old head, so I was born in 84. I grew up in the projects, actually. I grew up in, it's called Claremont Projects. Well, the Claremont Village Projects, Morris Houses. Growing up, I grew up, you know, single mother. I have a brother, you know, older brother. He's still alive. Shout out to Hassan. 9 years older than me. So it was just me, my mom, and my brother. And we grew up in the projects. She was a working mom, single mom, but she was somebody who got up every day and bust her, you know what, to take care of us.
Before we continue, what's mom's name?
Roz. Shout out to Miss Roz. she did a great job. So like I said, every day she would get up, go to work. The beauty of it was that it showed me that you have to, no matter what your circumstances is, no matter what your environment is, you still have to do what you got to do and put one foot in front of the other, and do what you got to do to take care of your family. So that showed me some work ethic. But the other part of it was that because it was just mom, no father in the household, and an older brother, and we were so far apart that I had a lot of free time. So I was a smart kid growing up. I loved school when I was a kid. I was like, I went to school early, so I was fiending to go to school. When I was 4 years old, I kept asking my mom, when can I go to school? When can I go to school? She taught me how to read in the household. She taught me how to count. She taught me all that stuff, but I wanted to go to school and get around other kids. So I went to school at four. I never went to preschool. I went straight to kindergarten. And I remember my first teacher, Miss Klein. Miss Klein was like really, really involved in my education. And she was like encouraging me. But long story short, like, just
it's okay. Brother. No, CCD, you gotta stop. Let's stop right here.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you go and keep going. Keep going. So first of all, Miss Klein was a very influential person in your life.
Yes, she was.
What is something that she did or a story that you can share that really sticks to you? And because it's part of your process and your decision making, right?
Yeah.
You hear Miss Klein in the back of your head.
Yeah.
What is she telling you when you got to make a tough decision?
Well, that was a long time ago. I'm 41, so let me see. I don't know. I can't really actually remember, you know, specific things she would say to me because I was four. But I do remember, like, just her just really, really caring about me. That was the first time seeing, like, you know, somebody outside of my mom or my family was somebody. And actually, she was a Caucasian teacher also. So that showed me something like, oh, she actually cares about me. Like, it's different than what I'm used to, especially growing up in the projects and not really seeing white people like that. I didn't see Caucasian people in my growing up in the hood. So,
but that's very influential. Right. A little bit of attention goes a long way. You're working with youth now, so you know what the power of attention is.
Yes, sir.
And working with your youth now. So
yep.
That's why we talked a little bit about Miss Klein.
Okay.
So you said that you didn't have a male figure in your life, but I mean, I'm assuming that there were some male role models through your elementary, middle school, high school years that stick out a little?
Which you would think a lot of my influences wasn't good. You know, I didn't have a lot of positive role models growing up, male influences. Who was somewhat like my father was my uncle. My uncle James, but James was like giving me insight and advice and stuff over the phone because he was incarcerated. This is my mom's brother, my mom's only brother, actually. But he was incarcerated. He went in 77. He came out in 2008. So he was raising me through the phone and visits. I was constantly going upstate New York all different jails, Auburn, Clinton, every jail you could think of. I kind of like grew up going to jail as a kid. I was always on these, they used to have these things, these festivals that they would have where the family come, it's just so many different families and it's like picnic environments. I don't even like that word, excuse me. I hate that word, the connotations behind that word, but like, yeah, picnics and people just out there with their families taking pictures, eating. And then you take the, you know, sit on the visit for hours, I think 8 hour visits and things like that. But yeah, so James was just constantly, every time I would get into trouble, because I got into a lot of trouble growing up for fighting and, you know, bucking against the system and authority. I had issues with authority and things of that nature. And he would try to, like, school me and tell me, like, stop throwing stones at the prison. And I didn't know what that meant. But he basically was saying, like, you see where I'm at? I'm trying to school you from behind here. I don't want you to get to where I'm at to then have to then start trying to help somebody else. So he used to just tell me, like, yo, you on that wrong path. And, you know, but circumstances just continued for me to end up on that wrong path. And I think it starts in school, the school to prison pipeline.
You're listening to The Electric Drum. This is Linton Johnson. So you went to middle school, high school in the Bronx also?
All in
New York.
And Harlem as well.
In Harlem?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
How were those educational experiences for you?
It was good. Well, besides getting... Let me rewind. When I was younger, I had alopecia. And so I had bald spots when I was like from 10 to probably like 16, I had to deal with that disease and which now has me always wearing hats. It's part of that. I just was talking to a student yesterday, like, they wonder why I always got a hat on or whatever. I think there's something that I brought from my childhood because it was trauma, because a lot of kids was cruel. So because I had bald spots, one on the side of my head, one in the back of my head, and I was kind of smart, the teachers would constantly put me in the front of the classroom. I wanted to be in the back classroom with the kids that's making jokes and being silly and, you know, goofing off. But because they identified that I had some intelligence, they would put me in the front of the room. But now that's making me a target because everybody can see the bald spots and I'm overthinking about it. And I have issues with overthinking and anxiety. So anytime somebody would say something about me, my first reaction was to fight. That was my first reaction. I would give you a warning first. And then if you keep bothering me, I would try to tell the teacher. If nothing happens, I would fight. And then I would get in trouble, even though I tried to let the teacher know that this is something that I have an issue with. I couldn't really express what it really was, but it was really insecurity about, you know, my appearance and mm-hmm. kids bothering me. So besides that, I was always like really good in reading. That was my favorite thing. I was always a good reader. I loved history, sports. I played a lot of sports growing up, football, baseball, everything that you could think of. Basketball. But once I started to get around 12 and I went to junior high school, which we used to call it back in the days, junior high school, I went to this junior high school called 229. A lot of these kids run around talking about RPT. It's a project in New York called River Park Towers. And a lot of these kids watch YouTube and, you know, videos and they emulate what actually was my youth. So they talk about RPT. I went to junior high school right across the street from RPT. And once I got into that school, I started to like veer off into things that smoking weed, cutting class, leaving out of that school and going across the street. Because we used to go to recess. We would go outside for recess, for lunch. So not recess, but lunch. But we would go outside. So we would go across the street to the River Park Towers and go mess with girls, smoke weed. And that was the trajectory for the wrong paths, which is now what I'm trying to get. I'm trying to stop that with the youth that I work with now because I can see the same things happening around these same ages.
But when you have a lack of guidance, right?
Yes.
Decision-making is pretty poor.
Yes.
And your priorities are not there. Did this lead to incarceration or problem with the law?
It did. But before I get there, I just want to say this has absolutely nothing to do with how I was raised from my mom. Because my mom raised me with she instilled all of the right things into me about, you know, she would give me those talks about she would give me so many scenarios. This was during the Say No campaign and all that stuff, right? So she would try to keep me on the right path and always encouraging me and showing me love. And it's just, she spent so much time at work and I didn't have the other side that I would have needed to keep me structured, which would have been a father, is what had me gravitating towards the negative. So it did actually lead me into incarceration. I started to get in trouble. The first time I got in trouble, I was like 13 years old. Mm. And I was on juvenile probation. I still remember my PO's name. His name is PO Coachman. And Mr. Coachman told my mom, he said, if Layton does not stop this now, this is going to be just the beginning. And my mom, she understood that. She overstood that. Actually, I didn't understand that at all. I thought he was trying to judge me. In my mind, I'm like, you don't know me. I'm just getting in trouble now. This is not going to be I couldn't think beyond 13 or think beyond this is set up this way. It starts with getting in trouble in school. It starts with now not listening to your parents and gravitating to all the bad kids, doing the bad stuff. Then it starts with getting on probation early. Then it starts with detention. And then the next thing is higher prison, like prison. You know, Rikers Island and things of that nature, group homes. Mm. All of that was part of my story. That's part of my story. It's something called NSD. They used to have this thing called non-secure detention, which a lot of these kids in New Haven, a lot of my kids that I work with in the school and just in general in my organization in the community, they talk about the D a lot. And I caught myself the young person translator, because I understand the lingo, right? Somebody just said that yesterday. A kid said, yeah, when I was in the D, and another staff member was like, what, you went to Detroit? And he was like, he said, no, the D is detention. So that was my story also. 14 years old, I was in a group home, three different group homes, one in Queens. It was called St. Germain's. Then I got into trouble again and in the group home, and they sent me back to this thing called Spofford. Spofford is like the youth jail. It's a youth jail for youth. Then they gave me another chance, and I went to another place called Sheltering Arms. I was in this place called Boys Town. These are all they was trying to give me opportunities. And, you know, the streets had such a strong pull that.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. Want to give Layton a little breather here because he's going deep and his travels. And let's talk a little bit about the decision making at that age, because there's a lot of people that have, like you, had to develop or mature a little bit faster, and now you feel like you're grown. Mm-hmm. But yet your decision making is very faltered. It has faults in it. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone that has to make these decisions? Because the streets are still alluring.
Mm-hmm. They are.
Fast money is always alluring.
Always. My advice to anyone, I don't care if you're an older person, a younger person, is pay attention. Because if you could pay attention to what happens, if you pay attention to what's the biggest outcome of being involved in the streets. If you see what's happening right nowadays, everybody who's gravitating to, and I also like to say that a lot of this culture is not even, like for instance, New Haven culture or New York culture, they gravitate into Chicago lingo and Chicago way of life. That's not how New Haven way of life or New York or Hartford or whatever, Philly. This is the influence of that Chicago ops, this lingo about everybody's the ops and spinning on people and all these
The dialect, the lingo, dialect, yes,
is not of is, that's not our, that's not the origins of us. So be who you are. So, but pay attention. Everybody who's gravitating to that, they either get indicted and go to jail, or they die, or they end up in the streets, strung out. You know how many people that I know I grew up with that's outside now, hooked on fentanyl, on perks, on these pills, or they going in and out of prison, or they still standing in front of stores asking people for money. You're 60 years old, you're still outside doing, instead of putting work ethic and doing what you need to do.
Let's fast forward a little bit. You going in and out of these programs. What clicked for you? Mm-hmm. What was that turning point?
Well, I went to prison at 23 years old. And I sat down for a long time. I came home in 2017. And I went to a halfway house in Waterbury. But while I was inside, I went through the machine tool technology program in Carl Robinson. And I got 1,000 hours in machining. So I'm a machinist. I met a guy in there. His name is Dave Moon. Shout out to Dave Moon. Aspiring comedian. He used to tell a lot of jokes. Mm-hmm. I used to laugh at his jokes. He liked that. He was like, yo, bro, you're a good dude. Mm-hmm. I got, my father owns a shop in Hampton called Moon Cutter. So when you come home, I'm going to get you a job. As long as you could tell me that you know how to read a dial caliper and a micrometer. So I was like, yeah, I know how to do that. Of course. You know, my instructor, Rodriguez, taught me how to read. He said, that's the most important thing. This is how you get a job, if you could read a micrometer and a dial caliper. So he told his father, when I came home, I think it was July 31st, 2017, immediately I called him and he was like, yeah, come in tomorrow. So as soon as they gave me a chance out the halfway house, I went, had the interview, and I got the job immediately, within 30 days out. So I was working for about 3 months. And then one day I went to the office to leave to go to work. And the staff member told me that my work schedule wasn't updated and I couldn't leave. And he was like, if you leave the house, you're going to jail. And I was like, I said, bro, like, my case manager said, if I ever run into this problem, for you to just send her an email and then allow me to go to work. But he was adamant. He was like power tripping. And he was just like, well, I don't care. And if you leave. So I still wasn't to the point where I was emotionally intelligent enough to not allow him to trick me out of my spot, so, or my freedom. So, you know, I verbally told him what he could do with himself. He took that the wrong way, and he wrote me up a couple tickets. Said he felt threatened, and they sent me back for that. I got violated, and they sent me back to Cheshire. So I went back to Cheshire for 6 months. I came home in May 23rd, 2018. And from that point on, I went to Emerge. First, I started to work with Emerge CT. Shout out to Emerge, Alden, Pi. We call him Pi. That's my guy who was the director at the time, but now it's Alden. And I started to get that word you just said, emotionally intelligent. I started to learn emotional intelligence while working there. We was working with Yale. We was planting trees all over the city of New Haven with URI. We was doing bioswales. We was doing construction and deconstruction and landscape, all kinds of things. But besides just those skills, I was also learning about myself and learning emotional intelligence. And that was the main thing that we would go through when we would go through these workshops, or we would have real talk on Fridays with the brothers. And that, from that point on, things just started to get better. It was hard at first. Sometimes I would get checks. I would look at my check and be like, yo, what the hell is this? Like, are you serious? And those, the devil on one shoulder and God on the other side, the devil was trying his best to say, yo, just go back to the streets. You know, but that was the easy part. And I was refusing to go back because I knew what would happen. From that point on, I got the opportunity to go to the city of New Haven. So I worked for Parks and Rec after that. So I left Emerge, went to Parks and Rec, but I'm an alumni of Emerge. So I'm always part of Emerge. Also, we did a play while I was at Emerge called As We Emerge. We was the first ones doing, who did the first play, monologue, I should say, about our lives with Quentin Piak. Shout out to Don Sawyer over there. And fast forward, Parks and Rec, worked for City of New Haven for a while. Then I went to, after that, I started to work with an organization called Stop Solitary CT. And we was heavy into the fight with criminal justice reform, advocating for prisoners and people who was in solitary confinement, because I spent a long period of my incarceration in solitary. So I used my experience to then advocate for others. We got a law passed called the Protect Act, which ensured that the DOC cannot put people in solitary for, you know, an indefinite period of time, and it has to be the most serious case, not just because you got a ticket for, you know, having too much food in your cell, or being on the phone, or, you know, disobeying a direct order. That shouldn't, you know, equate you having to go to solitary. So that jail was shut down. Then while I was with Stop Solitary, that was criminal justice reform and a reentry lane. But I wanted to get more into what was always in my mind, was to work with the youth and prevent the youth from getting.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Leighton Johnson. Your organization name is?
I am the Voice of Legacy Company.
I am the Voice of Legacy Company. I see you on social media. You're always spreading positivity, working with the youth. You are pouring into the youth what no one poured into you.
I am.
How do you find the energy to stay focused? What gives you that push?
Exactly what you just said. The same way I was started pouring into and has always poured into my daughter, which I had at 16, still being a kid myself, but then having to, in some way, man up, because I still was a kid, but man up and be what I didn't have. So I had to, I didn't even know how to be a father because I didn't have an experience with that, but I knew what I didn't have, so I knew what I needed. So I started to do that for my daughter. And it's the same way with the kids that I work with the youth, the at-risk youth in New Haven and surrounding areas, that because I was that kid, and a lot of the things that they go through or they don't have, and opportunities they don't have, and, you know, the trauma and all that stuff that they have, I could relate to. I then try to look at myself back then and say, what would I need? What did I need? And I try to give that to them. I am doing that for them. You know, I got a young man who, this young kid is like, I could see myself in him so much. There's a lot of these kids, but one particular kid that I could see, he's not equipped with the tools that he needs. And my thing is to continue to present them with the tools they need to get them on the right path. And it's a lot of kids that's like that out here, man, just aimless and dealing with trauma.
I want to talk a little bit about decision making, because it's very important, right? To know the difference between the easy and the hard.
Mm-hmm.
Why choose the hard versus the easy? I mean, you said it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the devil was like, you can go make this money quick. Why choose the hard each and every time?
Because most things in life that are easy, there's something on the end of it that is going to bite you. And it seems that it's easy for a reason. That's to, you know, distract you or rock you to sleep and make you think that this is what you should be doing. If it's easy, it would be easy for me to get up and go get some drugs and, you know, move around and move and shake, or that's too easy. And it's more challenging to get up every single day with a purpose and a mission to not do that Every day I walk out, I live right smack dab in the hood. Every day I walk out, there's people outside, you know, selling drugs, people getting high.
I need to stop you right there. I know that people here in New Haven say they grew up in the hood, but is it really any comparison to the Bronx or or some of these places you mentioned? Well, the Tower.
I mean,
there's similarities.
It's similar. I think anytime you in an impoverished neighborhood, the demographics or the architecture, or that's not even a word, but the architecture of the neighborhood. Like my projects was 20 floors, and it's 16 different buildings in my projects. My building had 20 floors. It's like maybe two buildings that got like 16 floors, five apartments on each floor. But that is a community. So when you grow up in the projects, you grow up with a community-based thinking, because especially how back in the days, how we grew up with, you could be my uncle just because you live on the sixth floor, I live on the eighth floor, you know my mom, you know my brother, and you take care of making sure that I'm okay, and you could chastise me, you could discipline me, and you could, you know, when we take care of each other in the community, and we protect the community by any means, right? That's the main difference, but the poverty is the same, and the struggle is the same, and the pain is the same all across the USA in black and brown neighborhoods, and the opportunities that is strategically removed and not given to us so that we could then look at each other as enemies and, you know, destroy our own neighborhoods. But even in the hood, I don't care, every hood is not just all bad. And it's good people who just may not have been given the opportunities to show enough good. So once given more opportunities, then the neighborhoods will get better. And we got to start with the youth.
You work with the youth and your focus is with them. I mean, you take them to camps and you give them experiences that, you know, they normally would not have. How important is that to give them insight on, you know, on the outside world, outside of their environment?
That's extremely important. I think from living in New Haven, I lived in New Haven since 2003. I moved out here. I don't want to pivot too much, but 9/11 is the reason why I'm in Connecticut. My mom used to work for the World Trade Center, Building 7. She worked for Citibank, Citicorp. And when the towers went down, they moved her company to Stanford. So we didn't have a car at the time, and she was traveling back and forth to Connecticut. And then I was on the path of getting in trouble and doing a lot of things. So she thought a better environment would be better for me. And 2003, we moved to New Haven. But from my experience of New Haven, a lot of kids in New Haven grow up with just their neighborhood. It's these invisible lines that separate people from this neighborhood versus this neighborhood versus this neighborhood versus this. And then you don't get an opportunity to explore. And I grew up the same way. Mine was just, we used to call it the nine. That's what we call nine live. That's just my neighborhood. It was just by Wash. And, you know, anytime I would go other places, I still had that anxiety because all I know is my neighborhood. And so I started to explore other neighborhoods and other, you know, not just the hood. You got to get out of that mentality and see other things, do other things. That exposes you to other opportunities and other things in the world.
We are almost at the end of the conversation. Look at that, Mr. Layton. You thought that it was going to take a while. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is Layton Johnson with a T, as I keep enunciating, because we were talking about our vernacular here in New Haven earlier. With that said, I usually give the floor to say whatever it is you want to say. You can plug whatever you want to plug. It's all yours.
Okay, well, I think I didn't get a chance to speak with some of the things that I'm doing now. I'm an ed counselor in Pathways Academy. So shout out to the administration over there, Stephen Michaelite and Christina Sikorsky over there. Before that, I was working in Riverside. So I worked with the alternative education because I was in alternative education. So that's another thing. So shout out to them. If you want, anybody wants to follow us, I am. You can follow us on Facebook, IMTVOLCO.org on Facebook, and the same initials on Instagram. We're on Instagram also. If anybody wants to donate to the organization to continue our mission to help the youth, you can go. You can follow us on Zeffy.com. That's Zeffy, Zeffy.com, and then you just put in I am the voice of legacy company. That's just CO dot. So I am the voice of legacy, CO dot. And yeah, if you want to donate to any of our things, what we we're looking to do going forward, we're looking to do a back to school drive, tentatively sometime in August. You know, if we could get enough donations. But we still, if anybody wants to reach out to us, you can reach out to us through, you could directly call us.
All right. What's the number?
475-331-1329. And if you got any youth who you want to get involved with the organization, you can reach out to us and we can give them some opportunities.
All right. Linton, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your story. We could have gone into another half hour because you got story, man. You're a good storyteller, my friend.
Thank you.
With that said, you have been listening to The Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canelario, and these have been the words full of wisdom from Mr. Linton Johnson. So thank you again for your time.
Shout out to my wife. Love you, baby.
And with that said, to my viewers, like always, or my listeners, thank you for listening.